Scatman's Audio.
Hey guys,
it's Julian
and it's Meg,
and we're the Soft Spot.
We are, and it's the farewell tour.
It's the farewell tour, all done from the comfort of the studio. My kind of touring,
a stationary tour.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna touch on a couple of our favorites.
We're gonna replay some of our favorite interviews,
but there's more of us. It's not just
this is brand new. What you're listening to right now is brand new.
It's re-releases remixed.
Yes, I am holding today's newspaper.
But today, before we dive into one of our favorites, we're going to talk a little bit about Soft Spots Gone Sour.
They don't work anymore.
Yeah.
It was a soft spot for so long, and then you revisit it and you're like, now wait a second.
Yeah,
this ain't working.
Yeah, it's crazy. You see something, it holds a lot of nostalgic value. You carry it with you your whole life.
In your mind.
Yes. Yeah. You defend it in arguments with people.
Oh, so many late night arguments.
And you include it in lists of favorites, and then you watch it or listen to it again, and
uh-huh.
You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I need to go back to that conversation and apologize
you're
to
like,
everybody.
Who was I when I decided that this defined me or was one of my favorite things?
Yeah.
Can you think of any of yours?
It's probably mostly going to be music.
Yeah.
I have a few embarrassing ones. One of them...
I'm just going to go ahead and guess that Alice in Chains is maybe on that list.
I am so sorry, and this is going to make you less attracted to me, but Alice in Chains holds up for me.
Okay.
I think that
to each his own, man.
They're great. They're still I mean, the first two albums, Jar of Flies and Dirt, but like...
What?
And I even read an... I was like, am I crazy? I wasn't that worried about it. So I looked up Pitchfork. They re-reviewed Dirt because it's been 25 years or something. And they were like, it's better than we thought.
Whoa.
That's Pitchfork.
Oh.
They don't even like music. So
what was that? You were telling me that you read an article about a woman who was like, Jagged Little Pill was my everything.
Oh, yeah. That was like
then she re-listened to it and she was like, this album is garbage.
Apparently the article was about how her husband or boyfriend, whatever, who cares, was like, that's a terrible album. And she was like, no, it's not.
He mansplained her out of loving Alanis Morissette.
Well, she had been defending it to him for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then he was like, whatever. And they stopped talking about it. And then she was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and listen to it and make sure I'm right.
With a more mature, critical ear.
Yes. And she was like, oh, these lyrics are really dumb. What's the point of that article?
Wasn't Alanis Morissette like fresh off of breaking up with Uncle Joey?
She was 22.
Exactly.
Or younger when
she
wrote some
credit,
of those.
Give her a little credit, man.
I know. And I think, you know, lyrics are like, you get a pass on lyrics.
She didn't say, would he go down on you in a supermarket? It's a theater. There's some...
it's sophisticated.
There's some sophistication there.
Yeah. She wasn't like in the Spencer's Gifts.
Yeah,
that I can see
exactly.
Would be a little sophomoric.
But she's talking about high art.
But here's the thing. She put to the, like, she quoted the lines like, you live, you learn, you cry, you learn, you, whatever the words are to that song.
Yeah.
The you live, you learn. And yes, on paper, they look a little simplistic and obvious. But do you know how many Beatles songs look like that if you put them on paper? It's not about that. It's about how they feel. It's about the context.
I mean, I love the Beach Boys, but round, round, get around, I get around.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
Well, it's a metaphor, and it's not. It's literal as hell.
Yeah. So there are dumb lyrics everywhere.
And you know, it's just one of those articles where it's like, what are you putting out into the world? Like, what's the point of this? You know?
I mean, I don't really feel like something has to be super articulate and highly intellectual to be great art or, you know, to have soft spot value.
I had a soft spot. To answer your question, I had a soft spot for the Red Hot Chili Peppers for a long time without listening to their old stuff that I really liked.
Right.
Like, all their new stuff was terrible. And then I listened to it. This happened years ago, but still. And I listened to it again, and I was like, oh, I really actually don't like this. This
Every
is,
time someone I says Red Hot like Chili this. Peppers, in my head, it's like,
yeah, and that's the new stuff, which is which you're right, is like that. And but I always thought, oh, you know, because Blood Sugar Sex Magik was one of my first CDs I bought, like when it was in the big, like, cardboard box. Uh-huh. And, like, that's how old it was. It was like Pearl Jam 10 and Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and both of those albums just don't do anything for me anymore.
Yeah, I was never a Pearl Jam person, but, you know, I respect it.
That was an amazing Eddie Vedder. It's really good. What about you? Do you have any? Well, we just experienced one recently.
Yeah. I watched Father of the Bride, not the original, the remake. A lot of people don't even know that that's a remake.
They probably think you're talking about the new one that's coming out.
Yeah.
You mean the 1991 Steve Martin,
yes,
Diane Keaton version.
Love Steve. Love Diane.
Right.
Can't get enough of them.
Right.
As humans, as actors, as artists,
mm-hmm,
ultimate soft spots. Also love Martin Short.
Oh, how can you not love Martin Short?
And I grew up watching that movie all the time, and mm-hmm, it always felt really good to watch. And now
it's got that Nancy Meyers glow of, like,
I know,
you know, it's almost like it's nostalgic while you're watching it for the first time. It's crazy.
Right.
She has a gift.
I haven't watched it as an adult, admittedly, and I was still, like, including it in my classic favorites. And then I rewatched it.
If you had to guess, what was the last time you watched it before we just watched it? Like, how many years?
Years ago.
Oh, okay. Like,
years ago. Way more than 10 years ago.
Oh, see, that's, you never know what you're going to see when you wait that long.
Right. First thing that struck me, and mm-hmm, you mentioned this too, not a single person of color.
Not one. Not
literally
in the background.
Started looking for them, and there was one black woman at the wedding.
At the reception.
And she's just, like, in the corner of the frame.
Yeah.
So that's really crazy to look at and to see. And
she was probably on the crew and wandered into frame. They were like, I guess we'll let it happen.
I just kind of can't believe that that film is so whitewashed.
It's, and 1991 does not feel like that long ago.
I know.
But there was zero, I think, mainstream discussion about that.
Right. So I was kind of just really put off by that.
Yeah.
I don't believe in, like, canceling things from the past,
no,
or whatever.
That's silly.
I totally believe in people learning from mistakes,
mm-hmm,
and progression. But man, that really,
yeah,
struck me.
I mean, even in
I
the
was like,
town,
this is the whitest movie ever.
Even in the fictional town, San Marino, which turns out to be Pasadena, we looked it up.
Right.
But even in a town like that, there are a few black people. So you
yes,
can't be like, it's historical accurate.
I mean, it's just not. It's like,
it's
what kind of
there was just
know.
No awareness for it. Nobody
no.
cared.
And so that totally freaked me out.
Okay. So let's get to the story. So the story is extremely simple, actually.
Right.
There's not much of a plot.
But I think that seeing that and being like, wow, this is the whitest shit ever,
mm-hmm,
made it really hard for me to be like, I still love this. Because,
yeah.
And I'm not like a, you know, political correctness total crazy person.
You're not crazy.
But, you know, that made it hard to be like, I still love this. I'm like, you guys could, you know.
I gotta say, it's an interesting feeling to feel actual progress in your own heart, not in your mind where you think you're supposed to say the right thing, but actually in your heart. I've my heart has started to reject things that look like that.
Yeah.
It's
so,
like,
I think I felt a little bit of that. I also now have a huge problem whenever I watch anything that is just like totally happily ever after with no, mm-hmm, like, real issues.
Oh, it's a Disney level, like,
yeah,
ending, and, you know, the whole
I
thing.
I mean, she's 22 and she met
looks
someone.
Looks 14, by the way.
Yeah, that I know. Rewatching it, I was like, shit, she looks like jailbait.
When what's funny to me is that when they go through in the beginning and they show her as, like, a little girl growing up,
uh-huh,
right? They show, like, little scenes of her, like a vignette or a montage or whatever it's
right.
called. And then when they get to the current time where the actress who's going to get married is playing her, I thought we were still in a flashback because she looked so young. And then they were like, no, this is the version that's getting married. And I was like, unacceptable.
Yeah.
This girl is so
Father
young.
Father of the child bride.
Father of the child, which is a very sad movie.
It is a sad movie.
So that part was disturbing.
Yeah.
It's still, the performances are great.
But, and, you know, there wasn't quite enough kitchen.
It was a good kitchen.
It was a good kitchen, but
it was like a realistic
kitchen.
For a Nancy
Meyers film, there was just not quite enough kitchen.
You know what I love is they show the front of the house, and you talked about this, that they show the front of the house, and you were like, as a kid, I thought, that looks like a basic house. That's like a nice house.
And now I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's like a several million dollar home.
Well, I looked it up. 8 bedrooms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the beginning of the film, Steve Martin's narrating, and he's like, I love this little, quaint little house.
I know.
You know, my kids played basketball here, and it looks great with Christmas lights on. And the girl is marrying someone, like, crazy wealthy.
Yeah.
Like, one percenter family.
It's so funny.
And he's like, we're poor.
Yeah, to create the class difference between them and the rich family. They had to make the rich family so rich.
They literally have like maids walking around their house, and he gets like lost going to the bathroom.
It's
like
so funny.
Wow.
He's like, even though we had to cram our family of 4 into 8 bedrooms, we still somehow made it work.
Yeah.
So that part was a little irritating, but that's what, you know, you're going to get that with a Nancy Meyers film. That's kind of why you're there.
I think also when you see something like that, that's so idealistic, and you've lived a little, maybe you've had a divorce or two. Maybe you've like had several different careers, and you're like, oh, you don't just choose this one thing and then do it till you die and make a lot of money.
You mean marriage?
No. I mean marriage.
Oh,
I mean job. I mean anything.
Yeah.
That life is just not as like stable and predictable and perfect as you think it will be. And then after you've lived some real ass life, you watch something like that and you're like, wow, that's absolutely not how things go.
Exactly. Ultimately, it's a little sad to me because you want it to be that kind of movie for you where you're like, I know how stressful my real life is. Duh.
Yeah.
I want to watch this movie that is like a little bit romanticized and, you know, it's going to make me feel good again, which is like that's what our show's about, is celebrating that stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is a movie like that, you can actually, it's almost,
kind of
it goes
you
too
far.
Feel
like a failure.
Yeah, it goes too far and it makes you feel worse.
Yeah. Because I'm like, I got married when I looked like a baby.
Yeah.
And I was like freshly 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not married anymore.
The other thing, some other fun things about it are that he owns a sneaker manufacturing company that's they've made a reference to his like one of his competitors would be Nike.
Yeah.
And they're just in a manufacturing place in California making sneakers.
I know.
I don't think so.
I know. Yeah.
Those sneakers are $400 a pair.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? That's the only way they can pay.
They're the common projects of America.
And then the only other unrealistic thing about the shoes was that he made her custom wedding shoes that were his sneakers, his like Fuggo dad shoes.
I know.
But he put lace on them and he was like, she'll wear these for the wedding and be happy. And she was like, I love them. And I'm like, no woman.
No woman.
Spending that much on a wedding and on a dress would be like, oh yeah, I'll wear your Under Armour sneakers. Are you kidding me?
They sort of like allude to, and this was 91. The price point that they keep talking about, $250 a head.
Yeah.
And there's several hundred guests. That's like a couple $100,000 wedding.
Yeah.
So you're going to wear some LA gears to your couple $100,000 wedding?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, honey.
No.
I do not think so.
But just to not tear the movie apart, because the movie itself is well executed, I think.
Right.
It's well written. There's not a lot of conflict.
No.
It's mostly just a movie for dads to watch and feel like, oh, somebody understands that I miss my little girl.
Right.
That's basically it.
I know.
And Diane Keaton's whole thing is like, be realistic. They got to grow up. You should love her anyway.
I know. I love Diane Keaton's character.
She's great.
That remains.
Yeah.
She's like, pull your head out of your ass.
She brings a lot of substance to what is otherwise a not very substantial role for women, which is like the supportive housewife.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well,
That's Diane.
Leave it to Diane.
I followed Diane Keaton on Instagram because if we watched that movie.
I've been following Diane
on Instagram. Her son is like a 12 out of 10. Have you seen
him? Yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah.
It's like if Nancy Myers designed a kitchen person.
I love like the crazy outfits she posts. She wears like JNCOs to the farmer's market.
She doesn't care.
I'm like, where are you, Diane?
I know.
I will totally wear JNCOs to the farmer's market with you.
So that was an interesting experience. So if you go watch Father of the Bride, it's still fun to watch. It's just hard to get lost in the way that it used to.
Can you think of any albums that you maybe, I guess you already said Pearl Jam.
Blood Sugar Sex Magic is the one that just, I loved it.
Ain't that a mouthful?
I had so many, I know. I had so many, I have an embarrassing anecdote and then we'll introduce our episode.
Mm-hmm.
I was so proud of Blood Sugar Sex Magic. Like, I loved it so much that when my dad and Popsy were at our house one day when I was like 14 or something,
your
or 13.
Your dad and your grandpa.
Yeah. And we were in the car together. And this is something that almost never happens. We're not like, we weren't hanging out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in the car and I'm like, hey guys, you got to hear this song. It's amazing. And I put on, this is an opportunity that does not come up. This is a big deal.
Yeah.
And I had him put on Suck My Kiss by Red Hot Chili Peppers. And it's the most, if today, like of all the songs on that album, it's probably the worst one I could have chosen. And I still cringe when I think about the feeling in that car when I put that song on. The opening lines, because I still remember every word, is like, don't remember. But I'm too nervous. But it's like,
I'm nervous for you. That's so bad.
It's like young and dumb, full of cum, do me till I'm well done, little Bo Peep coming from my stun gun.
Oh.
Beware, take care, most motherfuckers have a cold ass stare.
Wow.
Oh baby, think you can, be my girl, I'll be your man. Someone full of fun, do me till I'm well done. It's like so bad.
I can't make eye contact with you right now.
What I just did was less awkward than the feeling in the car.
Well, yeah, you put on a song about cum in front of your in front of your grandpa.
Yeah, what was his problem?
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm
sweating.
I am definitely sweating.
We should.
You have my stress pit
going full
off the charts. I'm gonna need a refresh after this.
So let's go back to one of our favorite interviews.
Yeah, a soft spot that never went sour.
That's true.
So the
new movie is coming out soon. It's called Won't You Be My Neighbor, right? Or is that the documentary? I'm not sure. But anyway, the new Mr. Rogers biopic starring Tom Hanks.
The trailer made me cry.
The trailer is out and the movie's coming soon. And it's directed by Emily Heller's sister, Emily Heller, a guest on the previous Soft Spot episode. And we interviewed John Mulaney about Mr. Rogers, and it was one of our favorite episodes we've ever done, so...
Let her rip.
Let her rip! Hey, John.
Hey, you two. How are you?
Thanks for being
Good.
Here.
Thanks for having me.
You drove here yourself.
Yeah.
In a
Toyota RAV4.
I was also surprised to see that.
Why?
First of all, I could not picture you behind the wheel of a vehicle. I don't know why.
No one can. Nor can I.
I don't know if it's your... I'm not attacking you physically.
Please, go ahead.
But you just seem like you're always in the back seat, and maybe... And I don't know if it's like your wrists...
Metaphorically or what?
No, like you...
This is a chill guy? Like, you don't see...
No, like... Because like a... Almost like a Kennedy or a Wall Street guy would be like, you know, you tell people where to go and then they drive you.
Oh.
You seem fancy, is what I'm saying.
I think you backed into that, which is not really a compliment because, you know, that sounds alienating. But I think you meant, like, me doing anything physical seems odd.
Yes.
And then you were like, he might be offended, and I know he likes the Kennedys, so I'll say you're... It's
I
like
didn't
you're
know you liked the Kennedys.
Oh, yeah.
Is that why you grew your face like that, to look just like a Kennedy?
That's why I acted and behaved like I was running for president in 1961 my whole life. No, I'm a terrible driver, but I'm a very safe driver.
Same.
Slow... Very cautious. I'd rather everyone honk at me
I'd
than
rather
ever.
Die than make a left turn.
I'd rather, yes, I'd rather like shut down the highway.
Yeah.
Not causing a peaceful shutdown.
A peaceful shutdown. I'm the same way.
I've gotten a ticket for obstructing traffic, meaning driving too slow.
Right.
You have?
Yeah. I was in the far left lane in Ohio. Everyone was going like 90. Speed limit said 70.
Yeah.
So I was going 70. And I got pulled over.
Wow.
Yeah.
In Ohio.
In Ohio.
You know, I know, it's a purple
Riding
state.
Riding dirty in Ohio.
It is.
Absolutely.
Believe it or not, Meg just got her license.
Yeah?
Was that last week?
Yeah, like 4 days ago.
Because she lived in New York for 10 years.
For the Congratulations. 10 years.
Yeah.
And I had had it before, but I never drove in New York. That's way too scary for me.
Yeah.
Oh, I learned to drive in New York when I was 25. I'd never driven a car
in the city?
Before, ever. Yeah, in Queens.
Oh, weird.
In Astoria at the Ferrari driving
school. Because that is not what driving is like.
No, like, you feel like you're going 50 on the BQE, and you feel like you're going faster than anyone's ever
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
I feel like the lanes are smaller. Like, they make everybody drive much closer together.
And they don't repaint them.
No.
So there's no real demarcation point.
In a way, because that's because New York is so authentic, man. They got to leave those original paint lines.
Oh, yeah. It's so authentic. Yeah. It's not changed.
They're vintage.
It's still gritty. Yeah.
Yeah. So she thought she was going to have to take the driver's test, like the physical driver's test.
I didn't know what all they were going to make me do because it had been so long. I brought them my license that expired in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they were going to be like, oh, yeah.
From another state.
Yeah. From Texas, where I'm from. I thought they were going to be like, you have to do the whole thing all over again. But they just let me take a written test, and they were like, there you go.
I'm more afraid of that.
Yeah.
Because I drive on instinct.
Yeah.
I don't know the rules.
Yeah. Well, now I know all of the rules, except two that I just couldn't seem to.
Do you remember which ones you got wrong?
Right. It was one of those ones. It was like a scenario question, you know, like
four-way,
intersection? If you're in the dark and it's foggy and there's a little bit of rain and you're coming up on a hill, I was like,
that sounds like the beginning of a horror novel.
Drive 25 miles an hour with your hazards on. That's what I do in any situation.
Exactly.
I don't want a hydroplane, and I want the people behind me to know that
know
I'm in distress.
Yeah.
Have you ever hit anybody?
No.
Or anything? You've never... Okay.
No, I ran over, I think, a woodchuck once, and it really...
Woodchuck?
Or a beaver.
That sounds
I'm really
up.
Upset about it.
Those aren't even... I thought a woodchuck was kind of like...
I thought that was a cartoon.
Or it was in Woodstock area, New York.
Now that you're saying it, I think a woodchuck... I've always assumed a woodchuck is just another animal that I... Like a beaver with a more common name.
Might be a beaver. I have no idea.
Wow. Well... If you're listening at home and you're a French missionary, let us know.
Yeah, if you make pelts, please call us. I think I clipped the guy, and I really still feel bad about it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I pulled over and started crying. We were looking at wedding venues.
Oh, so you were a full grown adult.
I was a grown adult about to get married. man,
you know,
that little bastard, though, he was trying to cross that road. I did see that determination in his face. Ugh, I hated it.
You know what?
Stupid Chevy Malibu rental car.
Hey, guys, it's time to talk to you about Hers. Getting birth control is a hassle, am I right?
It is.
The time it takes to go to your gyno's office, the hassle of receiving your new pack on time, or the several phone calls you make to find out why your insurance is no longer paying for it is absurd. Your birth control should be delivered to you when you need it, where you need it, without judgment, and with your physician available to answer questions you might have. Do you not agree?
I totally agree. You're not alone. More than 10 million women in the U.S. take the pill, and the struggle to receive it is real, y'all. It's time to level the healthcare playing field, shall we?
Yeah. ForHers.com is a new women's wellness brand putting your body back in your control. It was fought for by women for women. ForHers is helping women across the country get convenient and affordable access to birth control.
There's no need to take travel time out of your already busy day. ForHers provides access to licensed doctors online who can evaluate you and, if appropriate, prescribe you birth control that can be delivered direct to your door. It puts the purchasing power back in your hands, bundling all the costs of receiving your birth control into one low price without the need for insurance. And let's face it, insurance sucks.
Why? What happened? Is there something in the news?
Yeah.
No more booking time off to go to a person's doctor appointment, pharmacy lines, or insurance company on hold music. In every way, I'm the only one that likes on hold music, but still, it's a pain in the butt.
For most of us,
yeah.
We're not interested.
Most people don't like Steve Winwood. So order now.
So if
our
you,
listeners,
whether or not you are already taking birth control, or even if you have no idea where to start, 4Hers will connect you to a doctor online who can help determine the option that will work best for you.
Our listeners will get their first month of birth control from Hers.com for just $5 right now while supplies last, and obviously subject to doctor approval. You can see the website for full details. Go to ForHers.com. That's ForHers.com/softspot, SOFTSPOT. That's ForHers.com/SOFTSPOT. You will get your first order for $5. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and safety information.
Your wife, that's an interesting scenario for her, because she sees you cry about that, and she's like, oh, okay, he is a good one.
This isn't a scam.
Yeah, yeah. He hasn't been pretending this whole time.
I didn't laugh and go, how interesting.
Right. It's somehow very reassuring.
Did you see life leave its body?
I once did a live prank call for people, and
Stress Factory?
Yes.
Good for you.
Yeah. It's actually, there's been enough time between now and then that I can bring it up without shame. But
Right.
So if you're listening at home, which is the only place you'd be doing this, I used to do live prank phone calls to open comedy shows at this club called the Stress Factory in New Jersey, and I would get a suggestion from an audience member. They would give me their family member's real phone number, and then I would call them and prank them live, and everyone could hear it in the room. And one girl said, my grandmother just hit a deer on the New Jersey Turnpike, or Turnpike, they're not on the Turnpike, on the Parkway.
Uh-huh.
Palisades
Parkway?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. But she was like, she goes, she just hit it last night, she's still really upset. Uh-huh. You should call her and
say. And you were like, this sounds like a fun prank phone call to
I'm like, she's still, this is fresh? Great.
Great.
She's like, call and be the cops. And I was like, you
did
got
it. Did you kill
it.
That old lady?
Well, now listen, so this is a decision I would never do that today. I'm in my 30s. And
you have material. Or even the basic skills to go, hey, welcome everyone, we're going to get the show started.
Well, now, hold on, John. I just realized that people at home might think, why would he choose to do prank phone
calls?
There's
a payphone on the stage at the Stress Factory.
And I was mandated by the owner, Vinnie Brand.
The wonderful Vinnie Brand to do it. Because he would do it himself.
I did not want to do these phone calls. Right. I heard shit about it for years.
So what happened to the grandma?
Okay, so what I was going to say is in my 30s, now, I would never make this phone call because I have empathy.
We got it. You're a good guy.
If you have time to prank call people, something's drastically wrong.
Exactly. So, anyway, I did pretend to be the cops. Her voice over the, I'll never forget it, was like central casting grandma. I mean, it was like, she sounded like Betty Crocker if she had a voice. She was just like, good evening, you know?
And I was like, I am old.
Yeah. I was like, hello, ma'am. And I did the whole thing. And so then I said, did you hit a deer on the parkway last night? You know, this is Officer so-and-so. And she's like, I did. And then she immediately goes, I saw his eyes and I tried to swerve out of the way. And I go, that's interesting. I witnessed the attack. And it looked like you swerved towards the animal. So I basically said,
which you're supposed to do, by the way.
Yes. It's for safety. You don't want to, you know.
You are supposed to
lean into the
son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Anyway, she starts crying.
Yeah.
I really get her. And she starts crying. And then I feel real bad.
And she's at the end of her life.
Even though I'm 22, I feel really bad.
Oh, yeah.
And so then her husband sees that his wife is crying on the phone. And he's like, give me that phone. And he gives it. And now he sounds like veteran of World War II.
Right.
Like old man, like perfect old man.
Wish World War II.
Yeah.
Where he has some closure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He wasn't like, hey, man, what's this about? You know, it wasn't, that's my nom guy.
That's nom guy, yeah. That's everyone's nom guy.
Nom, nom, nom. That would have been a cuter slogan for that war.
Nom, nom, nom.
Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah.
This war is yummy.
Yeah.
So he gets on and he goes, what is this all about? And I said, I'm officer such
and
such.
I'm just a 22-year-old shithead.
What a husband, though. What's this about?
Yeah.
I'll get to the bottom of this.
I make my wife cry.
Hello?
So then I say,
I do gardening at night. I'm a husband.
So then I say, this is Officer So-and-so. I witnessed your wife last night. And before I finish the sentence, I'll never forget this. Because he goes, oh, yeah, she hit a deer on the park, like sold her out immediately. And And then, you know, I was like, oh, way to have her back, sir, you know, whatever. And then I let it go and then whatever. And so apparently she was so upset that the girl, like, emailed the club a couple days later. She's like, my grandmother still won't talk to me. She can't believe that you got that I did that to her and stuff like that. And I was like,
you did that to her.
She did that to her grandma. Having observed it, people were always like, call my dad and say I'm dead.
It really was.
And it'd be like, all right, let's do it. And everyone would like, hush.
We actually had to be like, you can't be dead.
Right.
That had to be a rule.
Hello, this is the morgue.
Which, by the way, is probably how the morgue really does it. They're always laughing.
It's always by a phone call.
Because they don't. Yeah. And they don't. No, death doesn't faze them anymore. They think it's funny over there at the morgue.
And they call you from like a general number and then give you a different number to call them back at. And it's very confusing.
It's very
confusing. Can't just hit call back.
No.
No.
I forget how we got into that, but it was
feeling
mean.
Bad about hitting animals.
Oh, right.
Driving conditions.
Absolutely. Driving conditions.
Absolutely.
Driving test.
I don't think I've ever hit an animal. I don't think.
I bet you haven't.
Thank you.
Well, you were in New York City when you were an irresponsible person.
Right.
So you weren't driving.
I mean, I did hit an animal once, but it was Eric Andre, if you know what I'm saying. That was because he's a party animal.
And did you hit him once?
No.
Oh, okay. Never know if people actually don't like each other.
I know.
Yeah, but calling Eric Andre an animal doesn't mean I don't like him.
No, I was like, oh, maybe you're way comfortable with conflict.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, I'll tell you who I would hit.
I know how to get attention on a podcast.
I'll tell you who I'd punch in the face.
You make up a fight that happened between you and a more famous person.
I'd never run over an animal, but I'd beat Kurt Braunohler to death. What? He's a great guy. Nope.
So here's what I wanted to ask you. Are you generally a sentimental person, would you say?
Yes.
You are?
Very much so.
And I guess I kind of sense that about you, but I've been wrong about that with people before, where, you know, have you ever met someone who's decidedly
just not sentimental at all?
Yes. Forward looking people, they're very successful and they creep me out a little.
Yeah.
And they truly don't want to talk about things from the past. Not like repressing things. They truly, even if you brought up a great success or something, it's like, yeah, that was good. Yeah, I'm really excited, though, about this new thing I'm doing with Beats by Dre. And you're like, all right. And you just, can I ask you about the thing I like?
Yeah. They're like, and I'm like, I just wish we could go back all the time.
Same.
You know?
Absolutely.
And they're like, oh, so you make no money.
And that's why we have this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I was just rewatching Comeback Kid, and your dad doesn't seem like a very sentimental person. Is he a sentimental
person? He is very sentimental.
Is he?
So when we were growing up, my dad, to me, seemed like sort of like raised eyebrow, cold corporate lawyer shark, you know?
Yeah.
And was like, you know, what grade are you in? And I'd be like, third. I once had this toy that was covered in dirt, and he goes, is this your toy? And I said, yeah. And he goes, this thing is grotesque. But he is the warmest, most sentimental guy, and that has shown itself as we've gotten older.
If you had to guess, what would you say your dad's soft spot is? Like, what does he listen to or do when he's like, is it like Sinatra?
He's a very, though he took me to see Frank Sinatra for my 11th birthday.
Wow.
No, that would
That's
not be
That's where you got
go-to.
Your confidence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. it had started that early. All that love of wishing I was a dead person from the past. He reads a lot, very introspective, writes down quotes from books in this big, like, journal book he has. Very introspective person. You might not guess that the first times you met him, although now he seems more kind of outgoing with his emotions.
But I feel like it's more apparent when we get a little bit older, we see our parents as people. Mm-hmm. We don't see them as our parents so much. And I think
they change too.
Yeah, I do. I definitely think they changed.
Yeah, my grandfather was exactly like, you know, growing up, you couldn't, the subject of money was like completely verboten. Like you could not, you know, because it's that old school thing of like, we don't talk about money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Things like that. And then now he is much more open with his feelings. He sends poems to the family.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. It's like, if I had grown up with that grandfather, who knows how I would have turned out? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I asked you what your soft spot was, and you gave me several, but the one that stuck out to me was, and because I know that Meg also loves Mr. Rogers, was Mr. Rogers' Emmy speech.
Yes, when he won the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah, and I'd like to, can we play that now? I even like Tim Robbins' intro.
Yes, me too.
It's very classy.
Very heartfelt, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a dated tuxedo.
Yes, a very dated
tuxedo.
Like a tuxedo.
Tall white shirt.
Ladies and gentlemen, the best neighbor any of us has ever had, Fred Rogers. For giving generation upon generation of children confidence in themselves, for being their friend, for telling them again and again and again that they are special and that they have worth. It is my honor, on behalf of everyone here and on behalf of the millions of children whose mornings you have brightened with your kindness.
Matt, can you stop it for a second?
I present you with this Lifetime Achievement Award.
I didn't realize at first that this was the daytime Emmys.
That's what's great.
What is Tim Robbins doing there?
Well, I think he wanted to present this to Fred Rogers.
Oh, okay. He wasn't on Days of Our Lives.
But it's mainly soap stars and like Jenny Jones.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes this.
The reaction shots are like these chiseled chins of guys I didn't recognize. And I'm like, I don't remember.
It looks like an award for seat fillers.
Yeah. I was like, you don't look like that guy from One Day at a Time. What was
one
his name? With the cigarettes in his, what was that character's name? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I don't know. The only guy I know was Walt Willey, because he's a comedian. He was on All My Children.
Yes, and I opened for him at the Stress Factory and did a prank call.
Good for you.
You opened for Walt Willey?
Yes, and Zany's Pheasant Run.
Yeah.
Zany's St. Charles, Illinois.
Oh, I was just there for New Year's. I'm definitely not bragging. All right. Sorry. Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
A chin right there.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful night in this neighborhood. So many people have helped me to come to this night. Some of you are here. Some are far away. Some are even in heaven. All of us have special ones who have loved us into being. Would you just take, along with me, 10 seconds to think of the people who have helped you become who you are. Those who have cared about you and wanted what was best for you in life. 10 seconds of silence. I'll watch the time. Whomever you've been thinking about, how pleased they must be to know the difference you feel they've made. You know, they're the kind of people television does well to offer our world. Special thanks to my family and friends and to my co-workers in public broadcasting, family communications, and this academy for encouraging me, allowing me all these years to be your neighbor. May God be with you. Thank you very much.
Oof. So much.
Amazing.
It's amazing. I mean, first of all, the thing that strikes me the most is his calm.
Yes.
His calm in that room is like everybody got silent immediately.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And yeah.
That's what's really good. And by speaking low and, you know, quietly, he just had the whole place wrapped. It's really amazing.
Yeah. And there's like a noticeable like wave of not of like awe when he starts speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, that's the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird to think that he's from a childhood television show that was on every day. Because when you think of the other ones, you're like, no one else would get that reverence. You know what I mean? Like if SpongeBob came out.
He said so few words, but he just said, he said all the right ones in such a calm and reassuring way. It was...
He really thought about how to talk to kids. I read this story once that he was in Penn Station and this little boy had like a big, like a light up sword toy and was like, nah, bam, bam. It was like pretending to like kill someone with it. And he went up to him and the reporter says he walked over to the kid and he knelt down and he talked to him for like 1 second. And then the kid just put the sword down and he walked away. And he said, what did you say to that kid? And I said, well, sometimes when people have a toy like that, it's because they want to seem strong on the outside. So all I told him was that you're strong on the inside. Did you know that? And then he put the sword down.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Why couldn't he have come across Trump when he was young? he could have fixed him. But that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story. That reminds me of, I don't want to leave Mr. Rogers, but I think that reminds me of that David Bowie story. Did you ever hear that one?
What's that?
Well, because, and it's even more touching because it's coming from someone you wouldn't expect. Because
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's the same. They both had this ability to communicate in a way that is beyond, like, I don't know. We just... Not everyone is capable of that, and I think that's what makes them both so special.
He was doing a tour. He was promoting Labyrinth, and which got snubbed at the Oscars, by the way. And
this year again,
year. It keeps
Dark Crystal and Labyrinth got snubbed again.
Dark Crystal is weird.
I don't care for Dark Crystal.
I don't lump them.
I don't lump them either.
But so he was doing promotional stuff for that. So there were a lot of kids, you know, at these events, you know, that he would be talking. And he saw one kid over by himself. You know, all the other kids were like swarming him and like Mr. Bowie or whatever they, you know, this was back when they were polite, I guess. I just made that up. But this was the 80s when kids were very polite.
When they trampled each other to get in a concert.
So he saw this other kid like very, very shy, just standing by himself, like maybe 7 or 8 years old.
Like the wedding singer. Yeah. Go ahead.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what? That's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, it wasn't David Bowie?
No.
That scene in the wedding
singer? No, but how disappointing would that be if
so
that were
Bowie
true?
Sees a kid...
He says, everybody had like a minute, you know, and he walks over and he gets the kid.
I didn't know you could do that.
he takes the kid into another room with permission, I'm assuming, parents. He takes the kid into the other room. And by the way, Bowie was like, can I take your kid in the other room? I'm like, you can just take my kid. Like,
yeah.
So he takes him in the other room and it's just Bowie and this kid. And he says, I can see that you're feeling shy. Would you like to meet me? And the kid was like, yes. And he said, why are you feeling so shy? And he said, you know, I don't know. I just have a really hard time making eye contact and whatever. And the kid was probably on the spectrum of some kind of, you know. And Bowie said, well, I want to give you a gift. And he reached into his back pocket and pulled out his hand and just put it on the kid's face and said, this is a magical mask. And when you were wearing this, you are very strong and everybody loves you. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, as long as you're wearing this mask, you're safe and you're everybody is.
Everybody can see the best things about you.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the kid was like, okay. And then he walked out of the room and he was a different kid. And he was like in the crew and laughing and all that kind of stuff because he had this mask that David Bowie gave him.
Wow.
And then you're like, how do we know this story? It was that kid grew up and like got diagnosed eventually and all that kind of stuff. But he was like telling his friend this story at a bar. And he was like, have you ever told anybody that story? He goes, no. And he goes, did you ever take off the mask? And he goes, no, I'm wearing it right now.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Really cool.
That's really cool.
That's incredible. That speech, I mean, I appreciate you sending that to us because we really enjoyed it. I loved his phrase, think about the people who loved you into being.
Yes.
It's like such a cool...
Yes.
It's so few words, but it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch Mr. Rogers a lot growing up?
A fair amount. I think I started to have an appreciation for him much more in my like 20s and adult life.
Yeah.
But I was never like a cynical kid about it. I always liked it. It was very calming.
Yeah.
And I also liked it and Sesame Street because when you look at those, I'm like, that's what everything looked like in 85, 86.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like everything was kind of brown.
It's true.
Cars were tan.
Yeah.
And
Roseanne's couch was like
yeah.
what everybody decorated themselves.
It was like the
themselves.
Color scheme of, yeah, yeah. everything that was
like
happening.
When they go to the crayon factory and stuff on Mr. Rogers, it's like, yeah, that's what the world looked like when I was little.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Even the crayons are just different shades of brown.
Yeah, they're different shades of tan and banana color.
Yeah. And by the way, John, no big deal, but it's pronounced crayon.
Really?
Yeah. No one told you that?
How strict are people on that? Like nuclear nuclear strict?
I almost asked you to leave when you said crown.
I said crayon.
Crayon?
Crayon.
Crayon. What do you say?
Well, now listen. Now, crayon? You can disagree with me, but you can't change the way I'm saying it. Crayon, like cranberry. That's the way I'm saying it.
Oh, okay. But that's not at all what it looks like.
I get how I'm wrong, but don't change the way I'm doing it, because you were going cron?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Right. I'm not going to put the wrong word into your wrong mouth.
Markers and crayons.
Nope.
Yeah. Crayons. I'm surprised you don't call them Maccas or whatever.
Well, maybe I would if I didn't abandon my ethnicity.
Unlike you, I think I appreciated it more when I got older. I don't think I was a big fan as a kid. The world of Land of Make-Believe, the puppets, mm-hmm. they always freaked me out. They were like sinister looking to me.
Yeah.
I was easily scared as a kid, and I loved that show. Mm-hmm. I watched it every single day. I can remember, they addressed like really tough stuff.
Divorce. Yeah.
I remember that one.
And
the mailman.
Yeah, Mr. Feeny.
Yeah.
Mr. McFeeny?
I think it's Mr. McFeeny.
Or McSweeney,
yeah.
whatever it
Something
was.
Something like yeah. that. Mm-hmm.
McFeely.
Yes, that's it.
Right, because that's his middle name, Fred Rogers.
Oh, really? McFeely? Yeah.
It's either Feely or McFeely. I apologize for not, but why look it up? That's one of his, that's his middle name.
Yeah, and now we can't trust any word you pronounce because it could be completely wrong.
Crayon. Okay, I can adapt too. You know, I can adapt. I said for all intensive purposes till I was 28 years old.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What did I say? Oh, I used to say for se instead of per se.
Wow.
Like, you know.
That's not okay.
I thought it meant like, for example.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, like a brown crayon for se.
That I like. That yeah. sounds like Cajun or something.
I think I learned it in a Jersey diner, actually, from a townie.
It sounds like a lingo. Like,
yeah.
For se, let's talk about this.
Wait, what's the correct usage of per se?
I'm going to the restaurant per se. I don't know.
How do you use per se? It's not they always say it's not like a Superman per se.
Yeah, so I don't know what that means.
Yeah, me neither. I guess I didn't know.
Yeah, well,
you're
an English major, aren't you?
I know, but barely.
That's French.
2.2. Graduated with a 2.2.
That's okay.
Thank you.
It's all right. You're still here.
When they brought up divorce, why did you bring up the mailman?
Because he was the one who was going through a divorce, and they were... He did.
Oh, I thought he delivered Mr. Rogers a subpoena.
My wife.
Mr. Rogers would married for. He was married for 51 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And his wife is still very. She's a very active advocate for children.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Mr. McFeely. I looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
He was going through a divorce, and they really thoughtfully explained what that is and that it's okay. And basically the most important takeaway, I think, was that he was able to make kids feel like it's not your fault.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's kind of huge because I think most of the time kids somehow feel like they're at fault.
My parents split when I was 13 and it never occurred to me that it could possibly be my fault. And I've always wondered that because I know the joke is like, not joke, but the reality is that you have to tell kids it's not their fault.
Right.
But I can't imagine ever even thinking that it was my responsibility that my parents split up. Like, I wouldn't have that level of, I don't want to say ego, but I'm like, I'm not the problem.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't
blame myself for being born. If they were like, things were fine before you, I'd be like, that's not my problem.
I don't even blame myself for things that are absolutely my fault. So
true.
I'm not going to get
that
mad about your divorce.
That is absolutely true. Yeah. No, I could see why you would think that's not your fault at all. It's cool.
That's too heavy, and I'm not a psychologist, so I don't want to get into why kids think that, but I've always been curious why that happens.
I don't know. I wonder if it also has something to do with
your parents
age.
Are still together, right?
They are, yeah. Yeah.
And your parents are divorced. Did you ever feel like it was your fault?
No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. But there was other stuff happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
So how did they know Mr. Was it McFeely or Feely?
McFeely.
Mr. McFeely was going. Did he start erratically delivering the mail?
I remember it as he comes and he's uncomfortable talking about it and leaves.
Right.
Mm. And Mr. Rogers says to the audience, it's you don't have to be uncomfortable talking about it. That right. was like the first part of it is like,
wow,
you know, you may have friends whose parents are divorced, and this is something that it's okay to talk about.
Right.
So that was kind of the first part of the segment.
Well, that was one of the things I also loved. We were reading a lot of Mr. Rogers' quotes and listening to a lot of speeches last night. And he, one of the things he said, and I thought about it when you talked about that kid with the lightsaber, he was like, how brave it is to express your feelings, even if they're angry feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think that's really
that's
another like really special approach that he had that nobody else seems to really be taking mm-hmm. with kids.
Yeah, he had that great. You mentioned the Charlie Rose interview, so we watched that one too.
Yeah,
and
there's two a few years apart. They're probably
we watched the one that he was doing before this Emmy Award.
Okay,
it was like, you know, 97. But he said that the kid, I don't know what, wrote him a letter and was like, I don't know what, sometimes I want to sock my family. That's what it was. And it was a three-year-old.
I want to sock my three-year-old brother.
Yeah.
And he's like, instead of being like, he's like, how brave of you to express that. Maybe you should try, what did he say? Like he said, banging the piano or swimming really fast.
He said, when I play the piano really loudly or swim really hard, it helps me with my mad feelings.
Yeah.
And then he said he got a letter 20 years later from the kid that said, I am now a professional pianist
and a swimmer.
Yeah.
He took it so literally. Yeah.
He did. Yeah.
He's like, I can read
He's
between
like,
the
those
lines.
Those are the only two things I can do to work on my anger issues.
Problem is, I got to get real mad to be good at those things.
Yeah. He has to
be the Hulk.
He's like a disturbed concert pianist now.
That'd be a great Incredible Hulk character, is a guy that when you make him angry, he plays a symphony.
Yeah. Or swims real hard. Yeah. Laps. Not like an Aquaman thing. He swims.
He doesn't help anybody.
Yeah. Solitary pool laps.
Mr. Rogers got up, I think, at 5 a.m. every day, mm-hmm. prayed for all the people that he had to pray for an hour.
Yeah.
Then he swam for, you know, like 6 a.m. to 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, like, you ever swim in a pool recently? I'm very mellow after. Because it's like a full body.
It does. I haven't, like, exerted myself hard doing it, but I think I should. I think it's probably really good for
you. I dove into, like, a hotel, like a Marriott pool on this tour, being like, this will be fine. And I was so wiped.
Yeah.
After, I think, one
Did you cancel your
full
show?
Stretch. Yeah, I canceled the show. I told the people that I just wasn't going to do it.
Here's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. I went swimming.
Yeah, and I went swimming and I'm a little wiped out from it, and I need some time for myself.
No, I haven't changed. Success has not changed me, but I swam a little bit.
I swam.
Now I'm tired.
If you want, let me bring it down to earth. It was at a Courtyard Marriott, but I am canceling doing that.
Okay, well, thank you. I just want to thank you for you know, I hadn't thought about Mr. Rogers in a while. She read the book several times. Have you heard of this book?
I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I'm reading that now.
It's so great, right?
Yeah. That guy, the author had
Tim Madigan.
Oh, do you know much about him? I don't know.
I do.
About
he's
him.
He's a friend of my uncle's.
Oh, wow.
And that's how I found out about the book.
He's a journalist, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a journalist from Fort Worth.
I haven't read it yet, but you guys can spoil it if there's anything you particularly want to talk about.
No, he's just going through a lot, and he writes Mr. Rogers these letters. That's where I'm at in the book, just mm-hmm. about, like, I never felt my dad was proud of me.
Mm.
And Mr. Rogers is like, I am so proud of you. I am proud of you every day.
Wow.
I am proud of you. You're one. Same kinds of things he said to Charlie Rose. Like, do you realize there is only one Charlie Rose ever in the world?
I know. It's so great.
You know, Charlie Rose has obviously been exposed to be less than perfect.
Yes.
In that moment, though, he seems to be, like, really doing an inventory of himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I want to consume information. I want to run with the fastest
social
set.
Yeah, he was like, I
want
to feel everything and do everything.
And go everywhere.
And Mr. Rogers is like, you need silence. And you need to figure out how to have silence in, you know, while still doing television. And Charlie Rose figured it out because he's not on TV.
And he bowed out gracefully to pursue other interests.
He just
That's what happened.
No, he just wasn't on the next day.
That was a great moment. The other great moment, he goes, because he says the invisible, the things that are most essential in life.
Yes.
Are invisible to the eye.
Absolutely true.
And so, go ahead.
I love that. It's a quote from The Little Prince. Have you ever read that book?
No, but I've owned it many times.
Yeah. It is. It is one of those books that people give as a gift, and I think maybe it doesn't always get read.
You look at the cover so many times, you're like, I get it.
Yeah. He's on a planet. I vaguely remember Bob Fosse in the movie.
It's a science fiction. I get it.
He is on a planet.
Saint-Exupéry. I like that name so much. Yeah.
It's really
great. But I've
never
read it. So what is it in the book?
Well, this one speaks French, probably, so she reads it in the original language.
It's the quote starts with, "The heart can only see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye." And I love that he quoted that, because that's...
Yeah. Do you know how to say that in French? Do you remember how it goes?
Don't put me on the spot. Stop. Yeah. We're not doing that.
It's a very soft spot.
No. L'accord n'est pas.
No.
Vas-y.
Le poisson.
Pour les yeux.
Yeah. Very good, John.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Un oeil, mais les yeux.
Crown.
Yeah. One eye, two eyes.
Mm-hmm. Un oeil, les yeux. Different words. You ever watch French in Action?
Is that a movie?
There were these tapes. It actually has a narrative.
Oh.
I think he was a Yale University French professor, and it was shown in like schools and high schools. And, it's really funny. He's like, he's sitting at a desk teaching French on these videotapes. It's great. It's great.
Jacques Cousteau?
Basically.
He's in his full
wetsuit. Yeah, he's in a diving bell.
But that's a beautiful... Oh, but anyway...
But that is true that the essential things are often...
It is true, but then... So they do the back and forth thing in the interview where Charlie Rose says, you know, Mr. Rogers, what is essential about you that I cannot see? Which I thought was very ballsy of Mr. Rose.
Yeah. And... Well, he's got to put the screws to him.
He does. He can't let this guy get off with a
he's
softball
at the
interview.
Table, yeah.
So Mr. Rogers says, my spirituality and my family, essentially, right?
Totally.
So then Mr. Rogers says, and this is great in the context of what we know now about Mr. Charlie Rose being a monster, let's just say it, and that's me being sarcastic. I don't know how bad a person he is. But anyway, he says, what is essential about you, Charlie, that we cannot see? And you see him... Be like, which any of us would. I mean,
he's like so taken aback.
If Mr. Rogers' eyes looked at me in the eyes and asked me what was essential about me, I would just melt into a puddle of shame, I feel like. You know?
Yeah, I don't.
Really?
No. Maybe.
See, now, here's my take from that interview. Charlie Rose is really doing an inventory of what's flawed about him, mm-hmm. and I don't think he even registers that the harassment of his employees is part of it.
I absolutely agree.
Mm-hmm. I think he's like, I'm too busy. I'm too often ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to consume information. Nowhere in his head is he like,
I make people
come in my office. I come out of the shower naked. And
Oh, is that what he was doing?
I don't want to get the details wrong.
Yeah. But now that you're saying it, I think that is correct.
I think that is in the neighborhood of what
Who are these people with the showers in the office? Just don't put showers in the office.
Yeah. Don't talk to your coworkers.
Don't even talk to them. That's what email was for.
Don't socialize with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, John, you are... What year were you born?
1982.
Okay, so...
Water dog.
I asked you... What?
Water dog. Chinese New Year, water dog.
Oh.
And we're back in the year of the water dog.
Okay. Water dog? I've never heard of the water dog.
Year of the dog. And
I thought there was a dragon and a rat, and then that was all. That was as far as I went.
Those are they. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is just the dog. Why is it the
dog?
Water?
I don't know. I don't know. Someone told me it's a water dog. They were like, you're going to have a good year because it's the year of the water
him.
Dog.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I believe him.
It just seems strange to me that I've never heard the word water dog in my life, and it's part of the Chinese.
I feel like that demands a Googling. But back to
Not that we're
question.
Challenging you. I just want to know what the water dog is.
I could be totally wrong.
So do you know what the characteristics of it are that it means about you?
Oh, when I heard the characteristics,
I don't understand that.
It sounded slightly astrology-esque in that it covers so many bases that you can be like, that's me. It's like you work hard, but you love leisure. You know, you can be warm, but also you don't suffer fools.
You know what you want in life.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what you want in life, but sometimes you have a hard time getting it.
Yeah.
So 1982. So I asked you how old were you in 2000? Because I asked you what years mattered most to you, were formative years for you.
Yeah.
You said 95.
Uh-huh.
Which was, you were 13.
13.
That was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
13's a big one for everybody.
Yeah. And also OJ.
Mm-hmm.
Tanya Hart, the whole Tanya Harding thing happened around then, right?
Well, yeah, that was, and Clinton. That was just a... Yeah, that was just a time.
Is that what you were thinking of when you?
No, I also there was a tragedy in our friends and family world, and that also made me makes that stick out. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was just trying to think whether or not I wanted to get into.
No, that's okay because I didn't pick that year to do it.
That's why I said there was OJ, and then I stared off like a
And then
I know the truth.
And then your cousin Nicole.
Yeah. I once talked to someone who. I thought just had a passing acquaintanceship with OJ.
Uh-huh.
And I said, so, like, what do you think? He was like, well, I was friends with Nicole. And I was like, yeah, it's terrible. Yeah,
it's terrible. A lot of floors in this building. Ooh. This elevator's really taking a long time.
I shouldn't have pressed all the buttons.
And then you said 2001 for, I don't want to say obvious reasons. Were you in New York in 2001?
I was in Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C.?
Yep.
What were you doing there, running for office?
Yeah, I was working for Herbert Hoover.
So how old were you in 2001? You would have been?
I was 19.
19. College?
19. College,
you sophomore
went to Georgetown, year.
Right?
I went to Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
2001, September 11th, we were watching the Pentagon burn from right across the river on the roof of our door. I mean, there's far, far more dramatic stories than that. I started dating. I think I fell in love for the first time that year.
Oh, wow.
But it's all tied up that fall. That all feels like that.
Yeah. And then that ended when she was like, you know, jets can't melt fuel or melt steel or
fuel
something.
Fuel can't melt steel, yeah. Okay, thanks, guy on YouTube. I bet it can't.
I know. I love these guys that are like just normal people that are like, you know, it's like, oh, okay, so advanced physics is something that you understand now?
Or you expect me to take your word for it.
Yeah.
A building would never fall down due to, you're like, oh, wow. God.
Because I just feel like it wouldn't.
Because I just said that, and this public domain music reinforces the drama.
Maybe these stock photos will help change your mind. And then, so what I want to do is, Fogo, you said 2005. That's the one that I think is going to be fun. What happened in 2005 that you remember?
2005, I quit drinking.
Oh.
And stopped doing drugs.
Oh, great.
Yeah, August and September.
For how long? For like a few weeks or?
Till now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I knew that. That's congratulations.
Oh,
that's a long
you.
Time.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really am glad I did it.
That's great. Is that what made you think of that? Is the
2005?
That's got to be some kind of turning point. You know,
yeah,
you gotta take note of that. Yeah.
That was a big turning point for a lot of personality traits that were gone after that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet. Did you move to New York at that point?
I was in New York, so I had gone to like an outpatient rehab thing in college. Mm-hmm. And then in order to get away from drugs, I moved to New York and got into the comedy
scene. What a brilliant plan.
Yeah, it was a good plan. Yeah. Hung out in the East Village a lot.
Yeah.
And then, I was like, I remember the day I stopped, I was walking down the street and I thought, if I was watching this guy in a movie, I would not be rooting for him anymore.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
I was like, I would not be rooting for this guy anymore. Mm-hmm. So, then I stopped 2005.
So here's what I want to do. And this is... just to paint the picture for you and get you back into that year, we're going to play the top 10 Billboard singles from 2005.
2005, okay.
We want to know what the first thing that comes to mind is when you
hear
these
songs.
It'll
be that I don't recognize any of them. Go ahead.
That's fine. actually, you're incorrect, John. This was the soundtrack to your life in 2005.
All right,
okay, ready?
Go.
All right. This is called The Call. Do you know who it's by?
No idea. The Jerky Boys? What the hell is this?
That is incorrect. You get two more guesses.
Is this a person who all had another one-hit wonder?
No, but
they had a. They had,
who is that?
But he did.
They had a pretty good run.
They said Destiny like Britney Spears would say Destiny.
Destiny.
Yeah, who is that?
That would be the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, good for them. God bless them.
When I played it this morning, I was like, I have never heard this song before.
When I saw them in the movie The End, at the end of the movie, I was like, I was like, they're very good. I never dialed in during their
heyday. That brings me to a topic that I like. discussing a lot of times is when people get very famous for something that might not be critically lauded, right? Uh-huh. People tend to get really culture snobs tend to get very snobbish about it and snarky mm-hmm. about those people.
Almost like clockwork they do.
Right.
To a degree that you're like it's absurd, yeah.
And then you go but when you get to know if you do a little bit of digging about those people, usually they're immensely talented people.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like the Backstreet Boys could really sing. You know what I mean? It's just funny that like people are like, they suck. It's like, no, they sing way better than you do. They
also,
just say destiny the wrong way.
Most music in the 20th century was not sung by the people who wrote it. So like
right.
the notion of like, they were put together.
Yeah.
yeah.
They don't write them. Yeah. What do you think all entertainment is?
Yeah. yeah.
It's put together and the people didn't write it.
The monkeys
right.
didn't come up in the same zoo, huh?
Yeah.
So that was a bad joke. Okay, here's the end one, or the next one. Are you ready for this?
Yep.
This one you're gonna know.
Okay.
All right.
Don't know it yet.
Oh, I feel like we've heard enough of it already.
I don't know it yet.
These guys are from where you're from.
How do you know that?
Because that's what their name is about.
Linkin Park?
Yes!
Oh, that's the neighborhood I lived in.
I think we're good.
Are you? I was waiting to see if John was going to sing along.
No, I don't know this at all.
But you know,
I'm from the neighborhood Linkin Park, so that's
hold on. You know this part?
No.
What?
I didn't work at Supercuts back then. When would I listen to these songs? On the radio?
I feel like it was
yes,
so
on the radio. John.
When would I turn on an FM radio? 2005. I live in Brooklyn. I'm trying to do stand-up. I come home, and what, like a cop, I turn on an FM radio
92.3.
Listen to whatever's on? Absolutely not.
But, okay, it's just, I love that you don't know that song. That was like an enormous song. I can't believe
there's so many things I don't know that I don't know Linkin Park and a Backstreet Boys song, which doesn't even seem like the most famous Backstreet Boys song, by the way.
No, absolutely not. No, that's why I'm saying I didn't even know that one
yeah.
either. Okay, but I thought you'd know the Linkin Park one, but
nope.
I thought you probably went to high school with those guys.
No, they're from Linkin Park, Chicago? That's where it comes
that's
from?
That's why they're called Linkin Park,
okay.
yeah.
Interesting.
Or not, because I didn't look that up. I just assumed it. Because
there's other Linkin Parks throughout the United States.
I know.
Oh,
isn't
shit.
There one here?
Probably.
Because
probably.
When I was looking
and they
for
sound a
DMV,
lot more California.
There was definitely a Linkin Park option.
Yeah,
so.
They don't seem like they're from Chicago, though I'm not one to judge.
It sounded exactly like you were judging.
No, I'm just saying they're not like, yeah, all right, you know, Ryan Santo cards. Yeah.
Okay. Next is this one.
Oh, wait.
You gotta know this one.
Oh, this is different than what I thought it is, but I also know this one.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I remember this.
Do you remember feeling inspired when you got sober to this song?
I remember I was sober, so I finally had enough money to take a taxi, and this was part of it.
Do you have no idea who this is?
No, who is it?
Missy Elliott.
Cool.
John, I had no idea you were like...
He was a cool Brooklyn guy then.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Up until a few months ago.
I actually did get the most like new good music because my roommate and best friend Kevin worked at Rolling Stone
mm-hmm.
and he'd bring home like everything. So,
oh, that's cool.
So to this day, the most recent music I have is from like 07 because that's when we
right.
stopped. 08, we stopped living
here. I can understand being in New York and not hearing anything because I've only been here for a few months
yeah.
and I wasn't listening to the radio or... I mean, the only time I ever would hear anything was when I was in a cab.
Yeah,
other
that's...
than that, had the earbuds in. And...
Normally takes me like 2 years and then I hear it at a wedding.
Right.
And I'm like, what is this? And
yeah.
My wife's like, call me maybe. And I'm like, this song is great. We're like, this is a great song. She's
yeah.
like, yeah, it was a big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another one.
All right. You don't need these intros, by the way, musicians.
I know.
Just start the song.
It was a simpler time when you had a lot of time to get your
yeah.
song started.
Hey, we about to get the song started.
Mm-hmm. Any minute now, we're going to get this song. This could literally be anything.
Is this Mark Ronson?
Good.
That's it. That feels like a good guess to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That song kind of sounds like all the songs did in 2005.
Yeah.
That could have been by
anybody.
That
was Janet Jackson? Oh. Sister of Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But also, you know, a very accomplished musician on her own.
Yeah.
I didn't need to mention Michael.
You did not.
No.
So, yeah, you're right. That sound has, like, definitely been mined by Mark Ronson. So
it was the piano, the, like, practical piano within the sample. I'm like, that sounds like Mark Ronson.
I'm gonna skip a few because you're not knowing any of these anyway.
Not
so
at all.
We'll just go to the fun ones that you don't know.
Okay.
I'm gonna do the last two.
Okay.
Here we go. This is not the last song we just played.
Another intro with talking.
John, if you don't know this song...
Let's let it get started. Let's let the artist begin the song. Just listen. All you people look at me like I'm a little girl. Am I supposed to know it by now?
Yes. No. Wait till the
right,
chorus.
Wait.
Yeah. I'm sure nobody at home is mad that this is playing.
I know.
Temperature okay for you? yeah, it's fine, yeah.
This voice doesn't sound familiar to you?
Is it Britney?
It is Britney!
Okay.
What's her last name?
Ooh, good question. By the way,
Simpson.
When is someone gonna
this is
write
Britney Simpson
mm-hmm. like an oral history of the Mickey Mouse Club?
I know.
I would
that
read
would
that
be
cover
fantastic.
To fucking cover.
I know. Mostly just a slave for you.
What's this slave for you this called?
This was a banger.
Yeah. You wouldn't believe
so
the
she
excitement
was
on the dance floor.
This is
where?
The song where
on.
She danced. She did the snake dance. She was like at the award show.
Oh, okay.
Remember? She had
Madonna?
Giant.
I don't want to make any generalizations.
Yeah, maybe it was the same one where she did the kissing Madonna. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But she definitely had the snake.
She did. If you put that song in a bar full of any women or gay men, the place goes completely bananas. And
yeah.
I don't want to make generalizations, but I've pretty
it's true.
I would have said that part before you said the second.
Well,
part. Yeah.
That's fine.
It's
okay,
fine.
Last one. This is number one, which means you have to know it, John.
No, I don't.
Here we go.
Should I run? Oh, I've. If this is the song, I've heard this. I've heard this.
This
okay,
is like a
right.
collection of every pop
but
star.
But is this a... Was the thing I recognized a sample?
Probably. It's Lady Marmalade by the Pussycat... Or by Christina Aguilera. Lil
Which
Kim.
Was not an original song, so he is correct.
He is correct.
That.
The
yeah.
thing
yeah,
I
yeah,
recognize
yeah.
is an old sample.
Yes,
yeah,
it
okay.
is. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So nothing... You know, it's funny because...
not a thing.
Yeah, well, I don't get any emotions from those either. I mean, I feel like they're...
Yeah, but he didn't even know them.
I know. That's pretty surprising to me that you didn't even...
Really?
That you'd never
you
heard Linkin Park. I know, but I mean, it's osmosis, right? You've never been to a Sephora. Why would I go to Sephora? Like, Johnny, now you go
never
to Sephora.
Been to Sephora? Come on.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Do you go
no,
to
the... there's
do you
no
go
music
the...
on the subway. Except
that's
what
true.
I curated in my own pocket.
Or whatever somebody's singing live
yep.
that you don't
Which
want.
Is normally like, you know, Lean on Me or something.
Or mariachi music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never took taxis.
See, I did
listen
take
to the radio
taxis,
at home.
Yeah. Okay.
But even
why
when
were
you
taking
take...
taxis all the time?
I know, fancy pants.
Yeah,
I was
Mr. Prank Call Money.
Well, what happened was I bought this pair of fancy pants, and
yeah,
then I
and
felt,
then
like
you felt like you
I
had
gotta,
to,
I
right,
gotta
take
taxi. Cabs.
Right,
you got
right.
it.
I love picturing you going home to your apartment in Brooklyn.
Yeah,
and then turning on like an old timey wooden radio to listen to like
we had a high
stories, yeah. stories, story radio show like The Shadow. That's what I picture you doing.
Yes, and sitting on the floor like. Yeah, yeah.
Like a Carnation Instant Breakfast cover?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, we had a record player and...
Who's we?
My roommate, Kevin
oh,
and Joe.
Oh, from Rolling
yeah,
Stone, yeah.
yeah. So he would bring home, like... Yeah, I knew a lot of not top 40 stuff, which
right.
I'm not bragging. I don't know that stuff now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known it if I hadn't lived with him.
We'll close this out with music that you care about. I noticed recently...
Which everyone will be bummed about now.
No,
well,
no. I saw... On your social medias that you got to meet the Steely Dan guys. Are you a big Steely Dan fan?
I only met Donald Fagen.
Oh, okay.
I did not get to meet the late Walter Becker. I saw him once.
What was the problem there?
They both of them are.
I don't know when
Donald
Walter
Fagan
Becker
was
died.
Very nice. He died within the past year. And
oh, oh. Okay.
Donald Fagan was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a reputation for being kind of standoffish.
Yeah.
I saw them in a restaurant in Woodstock with my wife, and I was like, oh my God, it's Donald Fagan. And I'm like such a huge Steely Dan fan that mm-hmm. I was like, I might go for it
yeah.
and walk over,
yeah.
even though it might go badly. And she right. was like, it will go badly. Don't do it. You'll be happier that you don't do it.
Now, did she say that because of the context or ever?
No, it was like, no, there's been people that were both like, I want to meet that person. She's like, yeah, let's try to meet.
Oh, okay.
So
why did she think this one was going to go badly?
Because he was Donald Fagan.
Oh, and she knew
and they're
that.
Like,
okay.
Not
into it.
They're mm-hmm. a little standoffish. He was very nice to us. He came, saw the Broadway show that Nick Kroll and I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a cool cat.
So you did go over and
at he the... came backstage at that.
No, no, I'm saying the Woodstock restaurant.
No, I didn't go.
Oh, you didn't go. Okay.
And I all immediately knew she was right. I saw Phil Jackson on a plane
Whoa.
Once landing in L.A. And I was like, I grew up in Chicago, so I was like, I have to meet him. I have to meet him.
By the way, sorry, Phil Jackson, head coach of the Chicago Bulls during
okay,
the time
you.
That they won all their Super Bowls.
The 2 3-peats, yeah.
Yes.
So I walked up to him. He was, you know, taking his time like an older athlete, mm-hmm. like, and so goddamn tall. And as I walked up to him, something in my head said, do not ask for a picture. And I said, excuse me, coach, I'm from Chicago, and I just wanted to say thank you. And he said, well, thank you very much. And we shook hands. And
oh,
then right
great.
Then a guy walked up and said, hey, Phil, can I get a picture? And he said, no.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah.
Saved yourself the embarrassment, man.
Also, isn't it so satisfying when life proves you right in the moment?
Well, I've never had an instinct that... I've rarely had just instincts that are correct.
Right.
So that one was 100% correct. Yeah.
I love that. My brush with fame that matters to me, because you see famous
yeah.
people and you go, I don't care. You know, like, great that you're famous, but I'm not excited. But then you see people that you do care about and you're like, whoa, I've told you this story, but I saw Jim Jarmusch. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Jim Jarmusch came out of Katz's Delicatessen one night when I was walking home.
Sounds like him.
And he walks out. He's a very striking looking guy. He looks like David Lynch a little bit. You know,
yeah.
he's got the big white hair pompadour thing going, and he's very tall. He had a long black trench coat on. He
awesome.
Looked as cool as you could possibly look in the Lower East Side. And I'm like, oh my God, I think I'm going to do it. I think I'm going to at least say something to him, but I might even try to get a picture. And as I'm thinking that, two people come out behind him from Katz's Delicatessen, and one of them is a 6-foot black woman who is perfect looking and wearing a mini like fur coat with a mini skirt and high heels, so she's like 6'3". And then a blonde woman who looks like the polar opposite of that woman, but just like just as striking. Like, they were both models, obviously. They were both like 6'3". He's 6'1" or whatever. And I remember they both just put their arms under his arms and they were walking, and I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
Like, that's an impenetrable force.
That's
right
impenetrable.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
there's no way. And anybody that would approach that is, I mean,
yeah, you don't do that.
Mm-mm.
Have you ever met someone that is well known, and as you're talking to them you get starstruck?
Oh, that's a good question. I think so, yeah. At the Cellar, that would happen. At the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah.
I remember, like, when the first time I met Chris Rock, I didn't think I would be... I'd be like, whatever, he's a comic, he's sitting at the table.
Yeah.
And then once he, like, gave me direct attention, I was like, oh, shit, this is Chris Rock.
Yeah.
You know? So that happened, I remember that.
Yeah.
Jessica Simpson also at the Comedy Cellar table.
Really?
Yeah. Although, she made me nervous, but I was like, oh, right. You're, like, extremely famous.
Right.
Know? Yeah.
Right. Right.
I can't think of anyone.
Have you ever met?
Because I don't usually know. Because
yeah,
I'm not.
Yeah, she worked in New York with the highfalutins a lot, and would be like, "Oh, really?
You ran one of those poker games?"
I did. I am Molly.
Good for you.
No, I do hair, and I just prefer not to know. I don't watch a ton of TV. I don't ever go to the movies. I'm not like, I don't really know, and I just prefer to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been starstruck by people like Huma Abedin or Sunyi Previn I once saw.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
I went, oh! Oh, that was truly struck.
I did that with Yoko Ono.
Oh, yeah?
She walked out of her apartment building. In
the Dakota?
Yeah.
Well, that's on you, because you should be prepared when you walk out of the Dakota.
I know. I should have.
She walked out.
And I just went, yo! In my head, like, I just, not for Yoko. I just went, yo! Like, my body just went, yo! Then she didn't turn, so I hope she didn't think I was, like, being like, Yoko Ono. But that was, shocking.
I spent most of my time in New York trying desperately to run into David Bowie outside of the Puck building.
He was the one person I always wanted to meet.
I know. And I would always, I worked two blocks from him, two blocks from where he lived. And I would always see people. They were like, oh my God, I was just getting coffee at Bowery Bean and he was down there. And I was like, what? And I never saw him. I saw him on a few times, but I never saw David Bowie.
Did he live on Crosby?
It's on
Bond or Crosby, right?
It's on, I think, Crosby.
Yeah.
I remember hearing that he would walk around and doing that exactly, just walking around that part of
with a newspaper. Every picture I've seen of that, he always has a newspaper.
A hoodie and
or a little hat.
And a newspaper.
Would not be seen.
Never full Labyrinth regalia. You never walked around in that outfit.
No, with the very tight spandex.
Yes, and the big hair. It's weird. It was almost like he was trying to blend in.
I met Eddie Vedder, and I was happy to meet him, and I was like, this is cool. I met him at Bonnaroo in 2007, and I was talking to him, and as I was talking to him, I had a memory of that album, Vitology, coming out, and my brother was in high school, and I was still in seventh grade, and he would blast it every morning. We shared a room, kind of as if I have to be up, you have to be up there.
Yeah.
But I remember lying in bed listening to Better Man, and listening to the lyrics and being like, oh, that's a very sad situation. And I remember being like, life is kind of hard. Life is going to be hard. And I thought about that as I talked to him, and I was suddenly like, oh, God. Oh, my God.
Oh, God, you just reminded me of mine where I embarrassed myself.
Oh, what was it?
Well, first of all, where'd you see Soon Yi?
At Saturday Night Live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was the host. No, she was in the hallway. She was in the hallway.
That's a big one.
This is my wife's story. I feel bad taking it.
That's
my
fine. Wife was. She's not here. She should have shown up if she wanted
my
to
My wife
tell
was
it.
Pushing our French bulldog Petunia in a stroller at 7th and Leroy, and a car pulled up, and Woody and Soon Yi got out. And I stared, and then they saw that I was pushing a bulldog in a stroller, and they stared back.
Who blinks first in that situation?
Yeah, well, everyone admitted that it was inappropriate.
Yeah. And then Soon Yi got out of her stroller, and she
None
was like,
was
I
okay.
told you this was inappropriate.
She's also 47.
She is.
We're still his teen wife.
So the one where I embarrassed myself was I was hosting something for Warner Music. I was at South By interviewing bands after they got off stage.
A thankless.
Yes, thing. It was awful. And I had to do Wayne Coyne, the singer from the Flaming Lips.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And he was the only artist of the evening that I particularly cared for in any way and also had a personal memory with.
Yeah.
So I was I was literally in my head going, don't bring it up, don't bring it up, don't bring it up, don't bring it up. And then I just immediately brought it up.
You do that.
I do that.
Yeah, you do that.
So he's like, hey, man, nice to meet you. I was like, did you have fun tonight playing, whatever. And he was like, yeah, it was great, man. He's in the suit and he's very, intimidating looking. And then I go, can I just tell you something? And he was like, I saw his eyes
he's
be like,
please don't.
He's like, can I see your credentials? So I go, yeah, I had a bad trip on acid in high school. And I played your song, the Madonna song from Cool Hand Luke, get yourself. You know that song?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's on one of their first albums. And so I said, I put it on repeat 70 times and it brought me out of a bad trip. And
what
he goes,
compliment.
I know. And he goes, why? I thought it was a compliment.
Sure.
It brought me out of a bad trip. That's what I thought. And then he goes, cool, man. And walked away.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was
interesting.
The conversation was going fine. And then he was like, oh no, this is exactly.
I don't find what you said alienating or insulting at
he
all.
He didn't like it.
He didn't like it?
I don't know why. Yeah. I guess it's you can talk to him if you're not a fan, but then if you are a fan, it's oh, I see what's going on. He thought I was interviewing him for a thing, but I was,
Bryan Cranston is a very nice person, so I don't mean to say that he, there was no negative moment in this story, but I was talking to him when he was hosting Saturday Night Live about the monologue, and we were talking about, what things to name check that he'd been in, and he was like, well, Seinfeld, we could say, and I went, you're Tim Watley. And he went, yeah. And I went, that's like being in The Godfather. And he was like, okay.
Wait, which one, what was he in Seinfeld? What was
the
Tim
dentist,
Watley?
Tim Watley.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I haven't been rewatching Seinfeld. So
I haven't either. It's
on all the time.
On the radio?
Yeah, on FM radio.
Well, thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
This was wonderful. And again, thanks mostly for bringing Mr. Rogers back into our lives.
Yeah. And I hope you love that book.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I think I needed to read it right now, too.
We have two little girls. We have a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to try and show them Mr. Rogers. I wasn't thinking about it before, but I'm like, I hope they like it. We'll see.
When I was pregnant, the only parenting book I bought was Mr. Rogers' book for parenting. Mm. And it's like really simple, wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody should read I'm Proud of You by Tim Madigan. It's a great book.
I think generationally, we all get this rap of like, we were told we were too special.
Yeah.
And, you know, like people are like, they got participation trophies. And it's like, mm-hmm. nah, we still had, everyone had their own childhood problems. But like, he was like, the way he said it was actually correct.
Yeah.
He wasn't building you up.
He was like, you are the only Charlie Rose that's ever been or ever will be.
Right.
Every kid should know that they're Charlie Rose.
Yeah. Well, great. Okay. Well, thanks so much, John. We really
appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll close this one out with the theme song for Mr. Rogers, and hopefully we don't get sued.
Go for it.
Thanks for listening to The Soft Spot. I'm Julia McCullough.
I'm Meg Malloy.
And thank you, John.
Thank you. Thank you, Meg and Julian.
Bye-bye. I wouldn't be surprised if he played that.
He did. He wrote it,
too. Of course he did. What? Really?
He was a pianist, yeah. He came to New York with, like, a bunch of songs to meet someone who drilled him.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you, so let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please won't you be my neighbor?
Guys, thanks for listening.
Yeah,
we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
That was awesome.
It was great. Check us out. Get us on iTunes. Rate and review us on iTunes. It really helps us when
subscribe.
You do that.
Subscribe
is the word I'm looking
you guys.
For. Subscribe.
You can rate and review, but what you really need to do is subscribe.
Mm-hmm. At Apple Podcasts, and then
at Starburns Audio.
Also, we are at Starburns Audio. Also. Tweet at us because we want to do love song dedications.
Guys, I'm dying to do some Delilah stuff.
At SoftSpotPod on Twitter.
Slide into my DMs.
Or Meg runs the Instagram and does a phenomenal job at SoftSpotPod on Instagram. DM her. And we will send out a love song dedication to someone that you are pining for, someone that you maybe they need to know that you still appreciate.
Tell me if you want... If you have a secret that you want me to tell,
is that?
I don't know. I want to speak for the people. I want to give you a voice.
Aww.
If you want to write a corny love letter to somebody, if you have a complaint that you'd like for me to air for you,
mm-hmm.
hit me up, baby.
And if you can just want to pair that with an 80s ballad, that would be right up my alley. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you how to love. And thanks so much
thanks
for listening.
Thanks for listening, guys. Have a good one.
Stay soft.
It's a good the show.